This episode contains adult content. Listener discretion is advised. The MFG Cast presents Human. Okay, so I'm going to double check just to make sure, because you've kind of said that you would go to the library to check some stuff out, but is that for sure what you're going to be doing?
I believe so, because I don't know. I can't remember if we Googled it last time, if there's like microfiche at this time.
Yeah, I think there was. I think we looked it up last time in that. And it seems like every time we're like, God, was this a thing? It was like a thing like 100 years before that. So it's like, yeah.
I mean, I know we had it when we were in grade school, right? So like 47 to 72 is not like that big of a stretch, really.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah. So I head out to the library.
Okay. Yeah. So you head to the library. There is a nice older lady behind the counter, and she says, hope you're having a fine day, sir. How may I help you?
Oh, hey, yeah. Thanks. You too. I'm actually looking to access some of the microfiche and maybe some old newspapers. I'm looking up about there's an orphanage burned down in town. It's the Davidson's Angels.
Okay. I can look. Do you have a specific date at all or anything like that? A specific year that would kind of help me out?
So out of game, was there a date on the back of the picture with it? Like some, you know, used to be people would put name and date.
Yeah. Like that. Let's say there wasn't an exact date, but let's say that there was a year. I'm not going to make up the year. Let's just say it was before. So it was before this time, just because
20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Cause I'm terrible with numbers and stuff like that. So I'll just say, yeah, 20 years ago sounds great.
Okay. So like 1927. So I don't have an exact date. I know that it was still operational in 1927. So sometime between 27 and, you know, maybe a couple of years ago.
Okay. And she just starts writing it out. She's like, Davidson's Angels. Okay. 1927. Is that what we talked about?
I think so. Yeah. 20. Maybe we just say 20.
Yeah. And she's like, okay. All right. Well, this may take me a little bit. So if you want to just have a seat, there's some water here if you'd like some as well. Unfortunately, I don't have any coffee made brewed right now, but maybe something here in the future here. We're working on it. But yeah, if you want to just take a seat, I will be with you hopefully shortly.
I mean, I got no worries about digging into it if you just point me in the right direction.
And she's like, well, okay. Well, if you really want to, it might be kind of a dig, you know, it might be kind of a dig for you, but I mean, if you're willing to take the time, go ahead. We just opened not that long ago, so we've got all day, and hopefully you do, because it's gonna be quite a bit. So, but again, here I will point you out. I'll let you know where everything is. And again, if you have any questions, I can always help you out. My name is Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So she leads you down an aisle of microfiche, and it's like, you know, it's separated by year. There's like, I don't know how microfiche was separated, so I'm just making it up. Let's say like there's some like even like even done by like cities or like, you know, or even like boroughs and stuff like that. There's like little spots here and there that they have names of, like, here's Queens and here's blah 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 blah. And she, you know, she's like, okay. She's like, I have to ask, was it here in Queens or was it our town?
I vaguely remember that it was in New York. I don't remember if it was in Queens proper.
Yeah, they I think that, well, I don't think, I know that it is in Queens. I'm just going to give it to you. I'm not going to have you roll for anything like that. So
because Brian, remember, right? We did discuss it and he remembered the fire. So
and they thought that it was they thought was probably pretty close to the precinct. So it, the precinct's in Queens. So you would assume that it would be as well. So
he says, it's in Queens here.
Okay. Okay. Well, then you're going to be looking at this section right here. And it's like, they have like the rolling rack, kind of like you would at a library, you know, like you do at a library, and it goes like 15 feet tall. And she's like, and then like wide, it's probably like 10 feet wide. She's like, well, you'd be looking in here, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, it's by specific date as well. So yeah, happy digging.
Thanks. He kind of like looks up and down and like up back again, up at the stack. Just kind of like, well, I guess I should get to digging. And, you know, he loosens his tie, takes his coat off and hangs it on the back of the chair and, you know, looks to, you know, find 1927, lets out a big sigh and like pulls down the first box.
This will be fun. I want you to roll me 2d6. This is going to be, it's going to be a weird roll, but I'm going to have you do it anyway. What's up?
I was just saying, I'm totally going to roll, but because I assume, right. So there is some like logical deductions that I could make.
Mm-hmm.
If I know that it burned, so with the picture had a date on it of 27. So 20 years ago, I'm 32.
Mm-hmm.
So we might need to adjust the date then. So presumably the guy is the same age as me, because when they drafted for World War II, they were, you know, there's still standards for like age and things like that. So I assume that he's roughly within, you know, 3 years of me, north or south.
Mm-hmm.
So that if I know he looks like he's 10 in the picture, and, you know, if I'm 32, so that was, I'm just thinking like I can kind of narrow the window a little bit,
mm-hmm.
based on my age, what I expect his age might be, how he was dressed in the picture, like they had a winter coat on. You know, I could skip the early months of the year and look straight at winter. Or mm-hmm. You know, he's in like little short pants that I could look at like spring, summer,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Yeah. Trees were in bloom, right? Like he is a detective. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. So why don't you actually, then I'm going to change everything I was about to say. Why don't you roll me an investigation check, and we'll have the DL be, it's going to be high because you have a lot there, but also because you kind of gave me a lot of good arguments on like, okay, you know, looking at the, what he's wearing and, you know, that kind of thing. I'm going to have the DL be a 5, which is still going to be very, very difficult, but not as difficult as I was going to make it before.
That is a 6 on the die. So that is an 8.
Nice. So yes. And. it's one of those things where it does take you a bit. Okay. I'm not going to have it just be like, ta-da, you found it. You know,
no, he's there for a couple hours digging through boxes because he pulls down the first one and starts to go through it. And he's just kind of scrolling. And he's like, jeez, you know what, you know, and he starts to think back, like, what did the picture look like, what's, you know, what was the kid wearing, blah blah blah, like, oh well, if you serve with me, then he's got to be around this age, blah blah blah, whatever. And then he like shelves that back again and mm-hmm. then like starts pulling, you know, other boxes, and then he's got like a stack of crap around him,
yeah,
ashtray full of cigarettes. Cigarette butts.
Yeah, so, you know, it takes you a bit or whatever, and like she even checks back with you after like an hour, and she's like, she actually gives you like a cup of coffee because she knows you're gonna be there for a bit. She finally got the coffee going. It's kind of a busier day in the library, which is surprising, but she brings you that cup of coffee, and you all of a sudden you just, you know, you find it, you know, you. It feels like one of those things that's going to take you forever, but you know, you find the right thing. It's actually got the name of the orphanage. It tells you about what's going on. But before we get to that, I would like to get kind of a monologue moment for you, because you've been through a lot in these past couple of weeks, actually. I mean, your life actually has been pretty ridiculous in the last couple of years, to tell you the truth. But
yeah.
You know, I want to know, like, I want like a moment of like this noir moment of, you know, the music swells and the and you it's got it's that back to that hard-boiled detective where you've been through some things, you've seen a lot of what's happened, you're trying to piece these all together, you're trying to figure out what this all means. So, you know, what does that mean to George?
So maybe we'll come to a monologue at the end, and I'll counter with this. If we could do sort of a montage of things, right? So like, you know, he's got his sleeves rolled up and he's got his collar loose and he's smoking and everything. And, you know, it's kind of dim because he's using the microfiche, right? So like the cigarette smoke is sort of, you know, wreathed in this reflection from the, you know, the screen and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, after like he has this little revelatory moment, because, you know, in the beginning, he's like, ah, you know, this is going to take all freaking day. And I, you know, the friggin' mob on my ass and this guy's, you know, running around. God, it's just, you know, everything is all topsy-turvy. And he's just like scrolling and scrolling and just like just jamming through it, you know, almost like letting his eyes unfocus to wait for that thing that kind of like scratches at the eyeball, that, you know, fire or Davidson's or, you know, anything that kind of like stands out. And, you know, sort of as his mind is wandering, you know, he thinks back to, you know, another time in France, you know, prior to the Jeep flipping over and all that kind of stuff, or you know, is there after, you know, like after D-Day kind of stuff, and they're just sort of like sort of pushing through. And, you know, it's just, it, you know, like it sucks, right? But there's that camaraderie of, you know, men in combat sort of thing. And they're, you know, the squad, you know, they're all just kind of bitching about, you know, the food sucks, or, you know, it's cold, it's, you know, whatever. And, you know, he just thinks back on like, and everybody was, you know, trying to make the best of it and, you know, kind of joking around, but, you know, Blanker, a la, what the fuck's his name? Michael, just kind of off on his own, you know, just sort of sitting, you know, like polishing up, you know, maintaining the rifle. You know, he's got the grease rag out. He's, you know, just like always kind of doing his own thing, you know, and then just sort of, you know, making mention of, ah, you know, guy's an odd nut, huh? You know, he's a good shot, but geez, you know, you can't get him to, you know, he's not like the rest of us, you know. And there's, you know, a murmur of ascension, and then they, you know, they kind of talk about him in a, you know, macho fucking pissing, you know, matched guys kind of, you know, whatever. And, you know, like the mic, you know, like the microfiche clicks as he like gets to the end of it, and he swaps out another one, and, you know, loads in another one. And there's just another scene of them, you know, like him in, you know, combat and like support, you know, just big smile on his face after some sort of an engagement. He's like, ah, you know, I killed, you know, I popped that, you know, lieutenant, you know, this, that, whatever. Like, yeah, you kill people because it's war, but like, it's not great, you know, like it's not fun, but he sort of relished it a little bit, you know, more, not more. Well, I guess some people probably do, but, you know, always that weird sort of like extra, you know. And he's just sort of, you know, it's like a constant stream of, you know, yeah, they kind of notice, but also like, you know, battle fatigue and PTSD and, you know, some guys go all in, some guys are all out, like, you know, all of these things that he's just sort of, you know, reliving, re-experiencing. And I think like when she comes and puts the coffee cup down, like it's not a loud, you know, like bump onto the desk, but it's enough to like make him start and jump, you know, almost like the, you know, the click of a landmine, or like, you know, just it triggers some other memory in him, because he's just sort of lost in all this stuff. And then, you know, when he eventually finds it, you know, he's again deep into another memory, and, you know, it's one of those things where he like scrolls past it, and then it's almost like a slap, and he kind of like shakes himself, and then he's pulls it back, you know, and sees the headline about, you know, fire at Davidson's Angels or whatever, and, you know, sort of goes, you know, starts reading through it, see what kind of information he can glean. He's got his little notepad out. He's taking some notes, and he's like, ah, son of a bitch. That's it. I got it. God, man, I don't know how we didn't see, you know, before, because he was always such an odd duck. But I mean, who could have expected that things would come to this? I just don't understand how he could be this way. Although, you know, I look at Maddie, and, you know, Maddie got messed up and all that stuff. Thought he was doing something good. I can't imagine what Blanker thought that he was doing, what kind of things he got mixed up in after the war. And that's a damn shame. I never really thought about him afterwards. Never even recognized him when he was talking to me. It's crazy. I don't even, where do you even begin to have one of your guys be like this, and to do the things that he did, and to put Jane in a hospital like that. I don't know. Jane's in the hospital. I mean, at least she looks like she, you know, seems like she's on the mend. So that's good. That's good. I hope she's safe. I assume she's safe. I don't know. It's probably best not to think. I don't want to think about that right now. I'm just not gonna. And he kind of, like, you know, looks up from the microfiche and, tell me what I found.
No, like, I'm gonna keep that a mystery. No, of course.
He's in a down mood from all the memories, and then, like, you know, where that leads him to, like, current things with Jane in the hospital, things like that. And, you know, it kind of sours his mood. So, like, he's excited that he found the information that, you know, could be super useful, but also it's just like, fuck.
yeah, for sure. So you look at this article, and it says, what did I call the place? I just lost it in my head here.
Davidson's Angels.
Davidson's, thank you. I was going to say another last name for some reason. Okay, so it says Davidson's Angels burned down in a horrific fire. It says it's got the, you know, July 4th, 1927. Now I have to think of good dialogue for a paper.
How do you like it?
Yeah, I know, right? It's always fun. A different kind of fireworks happened at good. Davidson's Angels late July 4th, when a spark emblazoned the Davidson's Angels orphanage facility.
Child warehouse.
Yeah, no shit, right? Massive damage was caused, along with several casualties. Fortunately, none of the children had been harmed in the fire. Only a few nuns and, well, let me say something else. A few sisters and...
What did they say that?
Give it to me.
I'm trying to think. With some nuns and priests. God, I'm trying to think of how they would phrase that. I'm trying to say if they would say sisters and fathers.
Well, they wouldn't say father. They might say, they would probably say nuns.
Yeah,
I guess. Nuns
and priests. Yeah. So, you know, with a select few nuns and priests not making it out of the fiery wreckage. Of those is a sister. Boy, names. I've made up so many names. I'm like, I don't want to reuse these
Catholics
names.
Catholics gotta be Mary, right? Mary.
Yeah.
Or...
Yes. Yep. Sister Mary Alexander and Sister June Rayburn and Father John DeMaster and Father Peter Scarlecki. you're gonna have to send me those names because I'm not writing them down as I'm saying them, unfortunately. And they say, unfortunately, dozens of orphans will be without a refuge as the orphanage has been labeled condemned by the city. But hopefully, with your debt, with your generous donations and help from the mayor and any great citizens, these girls and boys can find themselves a home. And that's pretty much what you read there.
Okay. I then pull out the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm looking for is police reports, further reporting. You know, it was learned that the fire started just outside of the rectory. You know, the traces of an accelerant, but like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
See if it follows up with any of the orphans. Like, if for whatever reason, like, you know, Michael Lee, whatever name comes up as missing, or you know, anything weird that pops up
to
follow up with that.
For sure. I'm going to have you roll another investigation for me there.
All right.
I'm going to have the DLB of 4 this time because you've already done a lot of good investigation.
Okay. That's another 6, 7, 8, baby.
Nice. So, yeah. So you find that foul play is suspected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say some leads. And then they do say, you do find out that a couple of the children are missing. And Michael Lee Frazier is one of them, and a more names.
I mean, if they're not plot relevant,
I'll say it anyway. Michael Lonsdale. So two Michaels are reported missing.
Okay.
Also, I will give you that one. The fire was actually. Give me a second. The fire was started in Sister Mary's room.
Yeah. And was her name on the photo at all? Or is there's pictures of the deceased in the paper probably, right?
Yeah, 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 for sure. And you can match them both up. Yep.
Yep. I thought so.
You're such a good investigator.
Boy, what's the and then? So bad at these things.
I can give you an and.
Yeah, do it.
Okay. There is a speaker system, a very old speaker system in the library. And you hear, if there is a Mr. George Armstrong, please report to the front desk. George Armstrong to the front desk. Thank you. Click.
Okay. He quickly files the stuff that he's got. I don't know that he puts the box away, but he doesn't want anybody to know exactly what he was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So he files the microfiche, maybe even intentionally out of order.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Grabs up his notebook, takes one last swig of the now very cold coffee, and makes his way to the front.
Okay. So, yeah, so you make your
way. He doesn't just stride out, though, because it's like his hackles go up a little bit.
Okay.
So like he walks to the end of the aisle and like stops and like looks like peek around the corner, but like stops and looks like doesn't make himself known immediately.
Okay.
To assess the situation. And then,
yeah. Like, why don't you roll me a perception check?
All right. I think my awareness is +2.
Nice.
It is. Yeah. That is a 7 total. I don't know what my DL was.
Okay. I was going to make it low. I was going to make it like a 2. So yeah. So you know, it doesn't look casual, but you also are not trying to raise suspicion just in case this is something sinister. So yeah. you kind of, you know, you start to walk past the microfiche shelving and you kind of like look as you were like just get yourself kind of exposed and there's a gun. No, I'm just kidding. I just really, as soon as you said like my hackles are up, I'm like, God, that'd be good. But I didn't plan that. So I'm not going to do that to you. So yeah, so there's nothing, as far as you can tell, there's nothing awry. You don't see anybody like sitting like, like writing something down and they're looking up at you. You know, you don't see, you probably see somebody that like when your presence is made, they do a reaction like most people do. They look at you and like, oh, there's a person, whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's nothing up as far as you can tell.
Do we want to pocket the end? Because I can't think of anything in the moment that makes sense.
Technically, what I'm doing right now is going to the end.
Oh, well, so on the awareness, I got.
Oh, on the awareness. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can pocket that one. I'm sorry. I apologize. So many ands, I can't even keep track, John.
I know. It's crazy.
Quit rolling so damn good. I'm just going to have to make the deals very high next.
So he starts forward again. He buttons his top button, you know, pulls his tie up as he's sort of walking forward, which then also may seem kind of weird walking out of the stacks, but he realizes that he's sort of like undone. So, yeah. You know, fixes himself and heads towards the librarian's desk, you know, like the main desk.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Margaret's there. She's kind of, you know, doing some things or whatever. And she looks up at you and she just says, oh, did you have any luck?
Yeah, I did. Thanks. I found exactly what I was looking for.
Oh, perfect.
I heard a page. I don't know if you would say page at the time. I heard my name was announced on the speakers.
Oh, you're Mr. Armstrong.
Yeah, yes. George Armstrong.
Oh, perfect.
Armstrong Investigations.
Oh, well, I mean, we don't have to get so formal. I mean, I already introduced myself. I am Margaret. Just to let you know, you have a phone call.
Oh, thank you. He kind of like looks around for like.
Yeah, yeah. It's just off to the side, to the left, you know, whatever.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm, of course.
He goes over and picks it up, you know, waits a beat, presses the flashing red button.
Mm-hmm.
Says Armstrong.
George, it's Brian.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, I'm glad I caught you there. I was kind of hoping that you would still be here or still be there. I have some information for you.
Oh, shoot. What do you got? Hold on. Yeah, one second. And he like, you know, pulls in the pocket, pulls out his pen and everything.
Yeah.
Shoot.
So he says, hold on. Let me get my notes out. I have so many notes in so many different places. I should have them all in one spot, but I am dumb. Okay. He says, first of all, did you find out anything?
Yeah. And he kind of looks and he's like sort of puts his hand like over the receiver kind of thing, like turns his back to everybody. Says, I found an article about the fire. July 4th, 27, massive damage. A couple of the custodians perished in the fire. One of them matching the sister Mary, you know, he flips through his paper, Mary Alexander. She's the one in the picture with him. The fire started in her room. I'll give you odds on who set the fire. Only other thing I found was this blanker, better known as Michael Lee Frazier. Him and another kid, Michael Lansdale, they both went missing after the fire.
That's funny. We must be on the same wavelength. So I actually found one of the old chiefs from this station. He visits all the time. One of his buddies still works here or whatever. And we actually started talking and he remembers that night. He remembers that it was just a suspicious thing that he was just surprised that it was such a quick fire and such an intense fire. And he thought that for some reason he had an inkling in the back of his head, one of the kids did it, but he couldn't prove it. So,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I think that I think Blanker did it, right? I mean, it makes sense to me.
I mean, it all matches up, right?
Yeah, so, it seemed to.
Yeah, for sure. So, so we go back and we look at that and we see that that place is burned down and it's condemned. Okay. So they had to knock it down. Empty lot, for a long, 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 long time, right? Mm-hmm. Then probably about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I can't remember the exact date, they put up hole-in-one donuts there.
No shit. So the notes that I was getting from Blanker turned out to be Blanker. They fucking smelled like donut grease. It was from a donut place. It's got to be that place, right?
Got to be.
Like, bingo. What are the odds?
So going and looking back at old records of who used to work there, guess whose name shows up?
Is it my buddy Michael Lee Frazier?
Not necessarily, but a Mr. Paul Blanker.
No shit, he used that name, huh?
He uses that name. Not a really good idea, but you know, even the smartest of people can make a mistake every once in a while.
That's crazy, because he used the same name for the paper. Like, you figured you would use a different name, right? Like,
you would think.
Like a chameleon, every face has got another name.
Yeah. Well, just like any criminal, they're always going to make one mistake, and that's where they're going to get caught.
All right, well, shit. So he's not hiding out in the ruins of the orphanage then, so I crossed that off my list.
Only thing is, and now I come to see this, is that the hole-in-one had actually been shut down because of a... God, I had the thing in my head.
Health violation?
Yes, thank you. Jesus. Like, seriously, that's what I have. Yeah, different health code violations, and they had to shut down. So it's just there.
Wait, how long ago did it shut down? Because, like, I've been getting notes for, like, 2 years.
Yeah. Let's say 4 years. So, like, four years ago.
No shit. Well, fuck, that's where he's got to be, right? He's got to be there.
I mean, it just makes sense.
And then there's a long pause. So then what do we do?
I'm going to let the dice decide this, because I have two thoughts in my head. I want the dice to decide.
I mean, I do too. And I'm undecided as to how to proceed.
Okay. He's like, I can help you. Unfortunately, I'm on the other side of town, heading up another investigation.
Look, I don't want you to get involved, because there's no way that this ends up where you don't get your hands dirty, I don't think. I mean, it could, I guess, if you go, but also if you put Jane in a hospital, then there's got to be a reckoning for that. And I don't know if I just hand them over to DeLuca and let his dogs loose on him.
Boy, you've put the GM and Brian in a conundrum. Cuz I see Brian as this straight-laced, by the book. He's busted a lot of dirty cops and made his way to the top the right way, and now you're asking him to look the other way. So I'm probably gonna need a fast talk.
But he's not lying, though. I mean, it's not really a fast talk. I mean, it could be like a straight charm, maybe,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Or persuasion.
Persuasion, yeah, for sure. You're really going to have to, because he really trusts you. But well, he also, lives by the letter of the law as well.
Yeah. And the last time that we had talked, or at some point in this part of the arc here, since he's kind of come to the understanding that Blanker's the one that crashed into us, right? Because the last time he talked to Brian, he said it without saying it, right? So that, like, this isn't necessarily new information, whether or not he clocked it or just like chalked it up to, you know, just me being upset kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know.
just roll me a persuasion check, but because he trusts you enough, I'm going to make it low. I'm going to make it lower. It's still going to be a 4. So it's still going to be pretty, it's going to be high enough, but yeah, I can't make it any lower just because of how committed he is to the job.
Yeah, no, it completely makes sense. That is 3, 4, 5. So 5, 6. It's going to be 6. Yes, and.
That's yes, and. Okay. So I want your and to be exactly what you want him to do.
So as you were saying that, I was thinking as you were talking that maybe I don't want to make him do anything, because I don't want him to be in any way, shape, or form involved. Because it would be easy for me to say, like, oh, make sure that there's no cars that go in that direction in the next hour, right? But then, like, if he gives that order, or like if he reroutes stuff, right, then his fingers are on. So I don't want any of that. So maybe the end is, like, I just say to him, you know, something to the effect of, look, I know I'm kind of putting you in a tight spot. So all I want you to do is forget we had this conversation. You know me, but if that's what he did, he's got to pay for that. It might not be right, but you get it. You know, something ever happened to Mary, what would you do?
And he like pauses for a very long time, almost to the point where you think like, are you still there? And he, you know, kind of mills about it a little bit. And he says, for all you've done for me and how much I trust you, I trust that you'll do the right thing. But if this actually gets your name on it, I don't know you anymore.
Understood. I get it. I don't want you getting in any kind of trouble.
So he's like, be smart, be safe. Don't get yourself killed.
Hasn't happened yet.
And he says, you sure you didn't steal that four-leaf clover that I have on my desk?
No, your Irishman's luck wouldn't work on me, I don't think.
I think you got enough for the both of us.
Well, let's hope so. At least enough for today.
And he just like, there's nothing else. He's out of words. So he's like, I've got to go.
All right. You take care. Be safe.
You too. Hopefully we'll be seeing you.
Count on it.
All right.
So he holds the phone, you know, for, you know, 30 seconds or whatever, and then like slowly places it back into the cradle. Because I just assume you smoke everywhere. He lights up a cigarette, takes a long, slow drag, tilts his head back, and, you know, just exhales up towards the ceiling, and like has an existential moment, because he doesn't know what to do, because he's never like killed anybody in cold blood, right? Like, again, like probably not murdered, you know, killed a bunch of people in combat, right? I mean, just that's the assumption, but it's impersonal mostly, and there's no malice necessarily. So I think he just like, I just kind of think he wanders out of the library, like doesn't say goodbye to Margaret, like walks past the desk, just like walks out and out onto the sidewalk. Not really sure what he's going to do. And I think he just starts to walk. The city, right? You get a cab anywhere. Like he needs to be moving.
Yeah, and normally when your ribs would hurt, like you have no feeling in them right now. Like you're not feeling your body. You're outside of your body right now. Your mind is a million miles from where you are at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a reasonably nice day, I think he is like literally walking and pondering. And I don't have anything witty or Nuari to say or whatever. Like he's so like deep into this thing that's happening / going to happen. You know, I think he winds up like bumping into a couple of people, you know, doesn't like ignore, like, hey, you know, like just keeps walking, doesn't say anything. Like he's, you know, completely lost in thought. Why? Now I don't know. I mean, so part of me is the player. And maybe as George as well would want to know why, what the fuck, right? But I think, you know, the other part of it is he, like, I don't, you know, like in the 40s, right? They call women hysterical. You know, they don't talk about PTSD. They talk about shell shock and like all this kind of stuff. So like, I don't know how nuanced his perception of his, you know, of Blanker's behavior would be, of like, oh, the kid was traumatized and obviously like acted out in the only way that he could think, which was to punish this nun, or to, you know, maybe he meant to scare her, but like burn the whole place down or whatever, right? Like, and then like there's things that we would think about that I don't know about in 1947, it'd be like, oh, you know, the kid's got trauma and, you know, wound up being untreated and like, you know, had other stuff. So like, yeah. So part of him is like, well, you know, why are you doing this? Why did this happen? Why would you want to do this? Right. Here's your monologue in a very slapdash sort of way. You know, why would you put us in that kind of jeopardy? Even if he was helping by, you know, eliminating, you know, Johnson. And then I think like the other part that he's wrestling with is like, this kid's just broken, right? Like there's just something wrong with him. I think might be the psychological complexity of the time, right? Like for a general public, right? Like he's a PI, he's not a, you know, health professional or, you know, whatever. And then he starts to think about, like, if this becomes a physical confrontation, like I might not make it, right? Like even firing a gun in his right hand is going to hurt. Like I might get one good shot and that may be it. And then he's, you know, then he starts to doubt himself and like, what am I doing? And like, it spins off on a tangent of, you know, not being, you know, capable necessarily. And I don't think it gets like self-berating, like, oh, you couldn't even go back to your factory job. You know, you're worthless, like not that kind of thing, but also like, oh, if I put myself in a bad spot, this might be it because I am not at 100%. And I think he winds up like, just like on a bench. I say there's like a park in the area because the library is there. So there might be some green space or whatever in that area. And I think he just winds up in the park smoking and yeah, like just having an existential crisis. And he watches like, you know, the kids in the park, the kids probably be in school, right? You know, like moms walking their babies and like, you know, old folks feeding the pigeons, where like he's just looking, you know, like just taking that in a new way when he's sort of confronted with this, you know, not only his own, his own humanity for sure. And the possibility of, you know, this might be the last day I sit in the park, depending on how this goes. And then, you know, so say this is like an hour or so, right? So like it's getting a little, you know, later. Oh, man, I don't know. Okay, I still don't know.
Well, I'm going to put a little something in this just for flavor, which would be kind of fun.
Okay, give it to me.
Yeah. So you see a mother and son walking in the park and you know, you did the whole thing like, okay, kids must be in school kind of thing. But there's this one kid that's walking with his mom and his mom is like, kind of like angry at him and kind of berating him a little bit. And she kind of stops within earshot and she's talking to him and she says, you made a mistake. You need to own up to that. There's a lot of things that are going to happen to your life, whether you're as tall as you are now or as big as I am when you get to be my age. There's got to be one question that's going to come to your mind every single time you do something that you question. What kind of person will I be today?
That's not fair.
Yes, we're putting more drama on it.
He gets up off the bench, just shooting. What do you know? You don't know nothing about it.
Everybody's having existential crises.
Oh, shit. Ah, Christ. Boy, oh, boy. Let's see. So I have two options. Either call DeLuca and go down with his goons or go in. Those are the two options.
Yep.
If they kill him, it's just about as good as if I kill him, but then I don't actually kill him. Or we could have the best of both worlds. I tell him, I say, let me go in and back me up. And then if he either gets me or gets, you know, tries to get out, they can, you know, I think I want to do that. I think that's the decision that I eventually come to as he wrestles with, like he, cause he does want to know, right? Like they fought together for, you know, some amount of time that's vaguely in the backstory. And even though like he was an odd duck, right? Like he didn't let us down. He didn't, you know what I mean? Like there is still some sense of very low on the scale at this point, but still some sense of like that shared experience. So yeah, I think he just like abruptly stands up, throws, you know, like a half smoked cigarette onto the sidewalk and, you know, walks towards the corner, hand raised, yelling for a, you know, for a cab.
For sure. Where are you going to, bud?
Yeah, I need to get down to Anton's.
Lickety split.
All right, just how I like it.
Yeah. And you, you know, get there in a reasonable time and I will let you set that scene.
So the cab pulls up. He flicks the butt of a cigarette out the window, gets out, pays the cabbie. The cabbie pulls away, and he's just like just standing on the sidewalk. You know, like he looks up at the sign and, you know, has a moment of like, this is how all of this cycle started kind of thing, right? Like it didn't like he doesn't have anything to do with Blanker per se, or like even the things that have happened to me necessarily, right? Like, yes, because it was his kid, but also it wasn't like he was doing something or driving anything, right? Like, but again, it just sort of rolls into like, you know, this is how this is all sort of started. And, you know, hopefully it's not where it ends for me, but hopefully like this will like make this even. And, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. And he, you know, he stands there for a minute and then, you know, kind of looks left and right and, you know, ding, ding, as he opens up the door and walks in.
Okay. There's someone standing inside the door, big palooka, kind of like Vinny, you know, pats you down.
I assume takes my pistol.
Yep. Always taking the weapons off. Yep. Checks you for any other weapons, any knives or anything like that. And he motions for you to, you know, go to that side.
He takes a deep breath. He doesn't say anything to the guy and, you know, just walks on towards the back booth.
Yeah, it's DeLuca is in his back booth. He's got a couple of other gentlemen with him. He's talking kind of intently. He actually doesn't see you right away, but then he catches a glimpse of you. His eyes kind of light up a little bit, and he says, "Mr. Armstrong, I believe you might have some information for me."
In fact, I do. I know where Blanker's at.
You know,
I also know that's not his real name.
Interesting. Tell me more.
So, and he stops. He's Do you mind? And he like, you know, points at one of the empty seats.
Yeah. He puts his hand out.
So he pulls it out. He unbuttons his coat. You know, pulls the, you know, sideways. You know, sits down, lights a cigarette. Takes a deep drag, flicks the ash, and the ash, you know, kind of leans forwards, flicks it, and then he's like, "Yeah, so it turns out that I know our Mr. Paul Blanker." He's Michael Lee Frazier. We served together over in Europe. He was an odd duck. I looked. I found his place. I found a place he's been staying at. He had a closet full of lots of pictures of me, pictures of people that I know. He's had costumes, disguises, whatever you want to call them. Somebody burned the place down. I don't know if that was you guys. I happened to be in the building at the time, you know, and he just kind of like waves it away, like, yeah, whatever. But, I found out where he's at. I don't know why he's doing what he's doing, but.
Okay. I like that you got this information for me. If you just, tell me where he is, we'll take care of him.
He takes another puff and leans forward and just like puts the cigarette in the ashtray. And he says, we're going to do that, but have a call it a request.
And he raises an eyebrow, waits for you.
So this Mr. Paul Blanker, Michael Lee Frazier, he put a cap in Ace Johnson, did me a huge favor. I don't know what that guy's deal was, but in doing so, he gave me this, you know, and he kind of like grabs his, you know, his side, and he put my girl in a hospital. It's pretty bad. I was just going to go over and take care of the situation, as someone might say, but I decided I'd come over and tell you. Ultimately, the same resolution, I'm assuming. But I want to know why. I got to know why. Pictures of me, pictures of my girl, pictures of Charlene. It doesn't make any sense. I haven't talked to this guy since I got out. It's been a year or more. Jesus, I can't figure it. I think he might have a couple of screws loose, but I want to go in and I want to talk to him. You do whatever you got to do. I just want to know why. Do you want to make another persuasion? Because I'm sure he doesn't give a shit one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to have that. Yep. I'm going to make it a little bit lower than I originally put it, just because you've been a help to them, to his organization even though it's been maybe reluctant to you, it's something that he's considering. So I'm going to make it a 5, which again seems very high, but it was going to be a lot higher than that.
Can I take my banked yes and add another +1 to that?
Go for it.
All right, here we go. Yeah. Ooh, it's a good thing. So 5 on the die +2 because I have persuasion 1. So that's a 7.
Nice. That's a yes and.
Boom.
Why don't you pick the and before I tell you what he says?
I don't get killed.
Now, I can't promise that one.
So yes, obviously he agrees. I don't know if we can say, and he considers us, settled as it were, but he's also like doing me a favor. So I don't know if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's also something I don't think I can grant you, because that's exactly what I was thinking. Because I'm you're basically asking him to kind of help you at the same time. So, trying to think of what I can give you that's a good compromise. How about
he pays me double?
How about this? How about I throw this out? How about that he? Okay, I'll do this in character, and we'll see how you think about it. If you don't like it, I'll get rid of it. He says, "How about this? I will let you have this conversation. And if things go poorly for you, I'll try to do my best not to let you die."
He nods. All right. Because so far, so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he says, here's what we're going to do. You are going to hail a cab. I'm going to have my men follow you. We're going to let you have your conversation. We'll give you 10 minutes. Hopefully by then you say what you want to say, nothing comes of it. And maybe if anything else happens, hopefully you're on the good side of it. But 10 minutes is a lot more than I give my own men.
He is gradually leaning back into the chair, and he says, he nods in acknowledgement. He says, that seems fair. Just don't let him rough me up too bad.
Again, promises I can't make when it comes to some things like that, but we'll try our best.
I do think he says, though, again, he leans forward again a little bit more towards the table, and he says, how does this leave us? He kind of waves his hand between us. We square.
And he eyes you for a little bit, and then he says, for now.
He kind of looks up and away real quickly,
So basically what he's saying, I won't even have you roll for this. Basically what he's saying is that he can't promise in the future that your paths won't cross and something might happen.
We're square until he needs something from me again. And then we're not.
Exactly.
I know how this works. Yeah. I don't think I have anything else. So he puts his hands on his knees and stands up, and he, looks down at the table, and he says, he's over at the Hole in One Donut on, such and such street. That's where the orphanage was. Been closed down about 4 years now. He must be staying there because he was sending me notes that smell like fucking donuts. It's got to be the place.
Boy, for a guy who is kind of the in the shadows kind of guy, he's not very smart when it comes to that kind of thing, huh?
He worked there using the name that he's using now. You believe that?
He shakes his head and he wants to laugh, but he's in such a moment where he's you can tell he just can't wait for something to happen to this guy that he doesn't laugh.
I think the only other thing he says, because I forgot that I was going to say it, is I'd rather not have my name associated with any of this.
But then he kind of rubs his hands together and he says, well, then if that's going to happen, then square we will not be.
His shoulders sag ever so slightly, and he just he just nods and he says, like he kind of turns to the other two guys because I'm assuming the other guys are goons.
Mm-hmm.
And says, I'll see you in a little bit, hopefully.
He says, we have a gentleman's agreement, but first we must finalize the agreement. And he like points to somebody and they put a couple of shot glasses down, pour something into it. And he points to, he brings it up to you and both of his goons, whatever. And he says, salute.
Salute.
He downs the drink, downs the shot.
He tinks it, takes the shot. Is not surprised, but also like it hits like a little bit of wonder. It's just, God, some good fucking whiskey. I'm drinking the wrong stuff. Shit.
Yep. Once you're with the good guys.
And he, you know, again, doesn't like slam it on the table, but there is sort of like that clap of the shot glass on the table. That's, you know, super movie tropey. And he just turns and walks out.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.